Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 94, Chris Ceballero and the Science of Leadership. Here's a shout out to listeners in Tacoma, Washington, and in Virginia, Bristol, Chesapeake, Forest, and Alexandria. With that, let's get started. Chris's career continues to amaze me. From the Air Force to working in the field of emergency medical services, he now is a best-selling author on leadership, a keynote speaker, a performance consultant, a podcaster, and now he's the executive producer of KLDR Online, which is a leadership development talk radio station. As you can tell, Chris is a steward who constantly gives back to his community. And I'm proud to say, Chris, thank you for your service. Part 1, where do we learn about leadership? Why is it that there's so many different definitions for leadership? John Maxwell has his definition, I have my definition, and so many others do too as well. Is the variation because leadership is an art? In this part, Chris is going to explore some of this. He starts out with a story about something that someone said to him that had an impact on his life, and it leads into this amazing discussion about what leadership is and the science of leadership. Here's Chris to get us started.
You know, I think that one of the things that was really important in my career was I thought that I was the cat's meow. You know, as you go through your career, you try to do what you think is best. And sometimes that best is your worst, Gary, as you know. One of the things that someone said to me was, you're not as important as you think you are. That really kind of hit me hard. You know, and then they followed it up with, you're the most driven individual I know, but you're leaving people in your wake. If you truly believe in leadership, what are you doing to grow people rather than to drown them as you go by? It was really kind of interesting that I thought when they said to me that you're the most driven individual, I took it as a compliment until I kind of reflected on it and said, maybe they were being critical.
Yeah.
It was really an eye-opener to me that even when somebody was giving me criticism, my ego was taking it as something that was a positive. It was really about 2 weeks of this on and off in my mind that I finally had to go back and say, that wasn't meant as a compliment, was it? Very, very bluntly, they were like, no, you're not as important as you think you are. That was a big aha moment for me that here I am thinking I'm setting the standards for others to follow. And as they put it, you're drowning people in your wake as you go by. It was very eye-opening.
The whole concept of ego is such an antithesis to what leadership is. I like how you described that one part where you use the metaphor of putting people, having them in your wake. They're just getting brushed aside and you probably didn't even realize it or thought about it that way.
No, I mean, I think that's right. I mean, when you think about leadership, and here's the challenge, right? When you think about leadership, where are we learning it? I mean, are they teaching it to us in high school? No, but I could tell you what the heck a parallelogram is. But when we think about it from the standpoint of where do we learn how to lead people, my education of business came from the baby boomers. You know, these were driven people who did what they did and they expected you to do it, you know, to do what they were doing, and you dedicate your life to your business. But there's no lessons on the science of leadership. There's no lessons on the art of leadership. There's no lessons on how to inspire and motivate. You do it because I told you to do it. That's what we kind of grew up with. So now when you think about this from the standpoint of being driven, of getting to the next stage in your career, it's because what I thought that's what we were supposed to do. And it's until you learn the science of leadership, it's until you learn the art of leadership, it's until you learn that the workforce is not there for you, that you're there for them, you're going to fail and stumble every step of the way. And once you're able now to generate the understanding of the science of leadership, and put the science in practice. You know, when you think about biology, Gary, we know what it takes to grow a plant. You know, we know what it takes for cells to split. Well, you know what? There's a science of what we know how to engage a workforce. There's a science to know how we get a satisfied workforce, how to recruit, how to retain, how to use conflict resolution. It's a science like any other science, but we fail to look at it.
I think that's one of the fallacies of people's perception of leadership. They think of it as an art. So it's intuitive. It's something I could just learn by doing. And that is so wrong today. It may explain this one fact. I'm going to drop this on you. It was an article that someone posted that from the time that someone starts in a supervisory position, they may not get any formal leadership training until 12 years later.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I don't doubt it. I mean, but one of the things that I think we have to be able to look at is our experiences. And sometimes, you know, one of the things that I'll respectfully disagree with is that I think we do learn the art of leadership from failure and from mistakes. And my book, Ultimate Leadership, 10 Rules for Success, was based on my failures and based on my mistakes and my successes and my lessons learned, because I needed to ensure that I wasn't going to make those mistakes again. Rule number one, never allow your emotions to dictate your actions. Gary, how do you think I learned that lesson? But I think that we don't put enough emphasis on the mistakes and the failures that we make. Again, who's teaching us the right way to do this? When we do it the wrong way, when we have failure, when we make mistakes, it's what we're not doing with those. We're not reflecting, we're not admitting, we're not growing, we're not being humble to those things. But I want to jump into something else that you talked about as well. So I want to go back to it, because we hear all the time that leadership is both an art and a science. I mean, I didn't make that up, but what I will say is this. You've got to know and understand the science before you can paint the portrait of organizational success. So when you talk about people will just use the art, it's because they're not knowing and understanding the science before they get to the art.
Yeah.
As I mentioned to you, as a leader, we sit over a little beaker and we've got our little components. We've got a little conflict resolution here, and we're putting a little bit of communication there, and we've got a little inspiration here, and then we've got a little resource, and then all of a sudden it blows up in your face and you've got to go back to the beaker, and you've got to be able now to start over again. They have to be married hand in hand, that before you can do the art, before you can paint the portrait of organizational success, you've got to know the science of what that is.
The art part of it is how you internalize and apply the science. That's where the art really comes in. But there are principles, there are specific practices that you can do to be effective at leadership. I do appreciate what you just said a little earlier about the whole learning from mistakes and the need to be reflective. And so often our gut is move on. Something bad happens, you just move on, but you don't reflect and you don't learn from the experience as much as you should.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things to add to that. And number one is the science of leadership is the science of leadership. What I give you with my expertise is my interpretation of that science. John Maxwell has an interpretation. Tony Robbins has an interpretation. Chris Sabalero has an interpretation. You have an interpretation. So the science doesn't change. It's how we use the science that's different. But one of the things that you said, I think, is very, very important, where you talked about reflection. The most important leadership component that you need to have for your ultimate success is good self-awareness. It makes no difference that you're have good communication skills. It makes no difference that you know how to resolve conflict. It makes no difference that you know how to inspire and motivate. If you don't understand the why of what you're doing and why you're doing it and how you're doing it and how your why affects other people, it doesn't make a difference how good you are in all those other, you know, all those other skills. If you got to be able to understand with self-reflection the why you do what you do. Why did you become a leader? I used to talk to all the new leaders all the time in my field. You know, I was a paramedic as I was growing up, Gary, and I would talk to all the new paramedics who became supervisors. And now they're off the truck and they're wearing these white shirts. And now they have gold badges instead of silver badges. And now I would bring them in my office. And the first thing I would say to them is, how does it feel to be a leader? Oh, you know, it's a lot of responsibility. And let me stop you there. You're not a leader. You're just some chick wearing a white shirt. You need to go out and earn your leadership every day. Leadership isn't a position. Leadership is an action. It's not a noun, it's a verb. You got to be able to do it. Makes no difference what color that badge is. You go out, earn the respect of your workforce that they want to follow you. And I think that that's where we fail, is that we truly don't understand the definition of leadership.
Part two, learning from failures and mistakes. I've stated before on shows that there's a link between learning and leadership. They're highly connected, almost like two sides of a coin, if you like that phrase. There's also a link between failures, mistakes, and opportunities. Chris unravels all these concepts, leadership, learning, mistakes, failures, opportunities, in a way that makes sense. Again, here's Chris.
You know, in the last segment, I talked about never allow your emotions to dictate your actions. And I was a very, very emotional leader. I was somebody that acted on raw emotion. It wasn't even passion. It was really that I allowed my emotions to guide me. And not just negatively, Gary, but sometimes it was even with the happy things. I would make decisions because I was elated at something and I was making the wrong decision. So when we think about this from the standpoint of who I was as a leader, the lesson came from my ego being bigger than the state of Texas that I was in at the time. I allowed myself to blow up in front of the workforce, and I pointed fingers, and I swore, and I yelled, and I called people out. I, you know, really embarrassed myself. And at the time, you think you're doing what is right until someone pulls you aside and sits you down. And in my case, it was the vice president of the organization and said, "What the heck are you thinking? You know, you don't treat people like that." And one of the things that I was doing was leading with ego. At the time, I was the clinical director of a high-performance EMS system in Fort Worth, Texas. You know, we ran 110,000 calls a year. We had 400 employees, 50 trucks a day on the street. I mean, it was my end. The clinical side of the business was my responsibility. And everything that we had to do clinically came out of my office. And I was walking around like I was paying bills up in that organization. It was not lending well to leading other people. I made this horrible mistake of pointing fingers and swearing and yelling and calling people by name. And I think the bigger lesson here was not that I embarrassed myself and lost my leadership integrity and my leadership reputation, but no matter how many times you say you're sorry, they never really accept that you're sorry. This black cloud followed me around for almost a decade. You know, we all make mistakes. We hear that. We all make mistakes and we need to admit our mistakes. But just because you admit your mistakes doesn't mean that they're going to give you a second chance to influence them.
And it's so important to let people know what you did wrong in your situation. But every day after that, they may never fully forgive you or treat you the way they could have been treating you if you had never been explosive, point fingers and use language and stuff. But you have to show that your behavior has changed,
right?
And constantly get feedback.
But even with that, people still know what you did.
Yeah.
There are people who know what I did, who weren't even working in the organization at the time that I did it. The old guard starts to transition out of the organization, but man, they're still talking about it. Don't get near him on his bad days. And, you know, he's somebody who's only out for himself and he's only padding his resume. And, you know, that goes back to the comment we had in the first segment where we talked about drowning people in the wake. You're the most driven individual I've ever met. It was hard to get out from under that. That's where you really kind of have to regroup to say, we explain what effect it had. Not only did it have a negative effect on my reputation, my credibility, my integrity, but it also had the effect to say, I got to do something different here. I've got to be a better leader. I've got to be a better professional. I've got to be a better clinician even. I got to do my job better and cleaner than the next guy kind of thing. We want to be able not only to think about how it affected you negatively. I don't want to say I'm happy for the incident because it was really, again, hard for me to get out from under that black cloud, but it turned me into the leader I am today, which created rule number one, never allow your emotions to dictate your actions. Again, I could say I'm grateful for the experience, but I'm still embarrassed by it.
And you bounce back. It may have taken a long time, but I mean, look at what you're doing now with all the work you're writing, your podcasting and so forth. There are so many things that happen in our lives that are viewed as negative, but they're also what enables us to bounce higher and to recover and to elevate ourselves in a way that we may not have been able to do without having those experiences.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really great point. It opens up your mind It's almost like an expansion of who you need to become. I think what the experience taught me was that I wasn't as important as I thought I was. Mm. You know, another great piece of advice I got earlier on in my career, and I wrote a book, another book, which was called Dear Younger Self, My Advice to You, where I got 10 or 12 of my peers around the United States to write, you know, if you stepped into a time machine and you met your 25-year-old self, what's the one piece of advice you would give yourself to help your transition to where you are today happen quicker? And my advice, of course, had a component of you're not as important as you think you are, but it was also shut up and listen more.
Yeah.
One of the things that, you know, you talk about where I am today, it was the experience that helped me grow as a leader, but it also expanded my mind to say, I can't wait for somebody to give me that opportunity. You know, they say that opportunity only knocks once, another quote that you hear about. And of course, Milton Berle has that great, he's that old vaudeville actor from the way back before electricity. But one of the things that he said, if opportunity doesn't knock, build a door. So when you talk about the parallel of where it got me to, it still was the interpretation of the leadership science to say, I'm not going to wait for opportunity to happen. I've got to go build my opportunities because opportunities create success. Success creates money. Money creates wealth. And we've got to be able to continue to do that. As it set me on a path, Gary, to learn from my mistake, it also broadened my horizon to say, now go do something with it.
Part 3, polish your knowledge. In my 9 practices book, I talk about the 7 principles of leadership. And the 7th one is develop leadership practices continuously. I mentioned this on the last podcast as well. Not only does Chris talk about this concept of continuous learning, he advises us on some other things as well. Here's Chris.
Everybody, if you're taking notes, write this down. This is going to be important, and this is for you. I mean, cheers to you, Gary. I mean, your podcast is awesome, and I think what you do is you give people the opportunity to hear, and you kind of do the same thing, right? You know, we're coming in and we're giving our expertise in these 3 segments, and the last segment is always about advice. I'm going to start off my advice with this: knowledge is power. Let's change that. Knowledge isn't power if you don't do anything with it. You've got to be able to put yourself in a position to understand that knowledge is the key to success. But knowledge is only the key to success if you're going to implement that knowledge. If you keep it inside, nothing is going to happen except you are going to be a smarter person. You take the knowledge, whether it's the knowledge from a book, whether it's the knowledge from a podcast, whether it's the knowledge from a radio show, whether it's the knowledge from a movie, and then you polish that knowledge. Don't take what I give you as law. The Dalai Lama has a great quote that says, when you speak, you are only repeating what you already know. But when you listen, you may learn something new. When I give you a piece of advice, a pearl of wisdom, my successes and my failures and my lessons learned, you take that tidbit of information, you polish that tidbit of information, you reflect on that piece of information, and then you make it your own. And when you give my advice to somebody else, it doesn't look like my advice at all. You start to develop your knowledge. You start to develop your experience. You start to develop your abilities. And now all the wisdom that you get, and that's what mentorship is. I'm sharing my wisdom. I don't want you to do what I say to do. I want you to listen to my experiences, and I want you to polish them and make them your own. I can't count the number of times I've given experiences to people and they've said, well, I'm not doing that. I didn't ask you to do it. I'm just trying to give you the opportunity to say that this is what happened when it happened. Do with it what you want. But one of the things that we've got to be able to do now is take that knowledge that you have, take that wisdom that you have, and create your opportunities for success. It's all about your vision. We have to be able to see where we're going. We're wired to think in pictures, and in the absence of a vision, we don't know where we're going. Once you have the vision, you need to be able to develop your goals to reach the vision. And the next thing you need to do is develop your plans to reach the goals that's going to reach the vision. This is a blueprint that happens, right? Opportunity doesn't happen by chance. You're not going to sit at home and someone's going to knock on a door and say, hey, Chris, 6-figure contract. Congratulations.
Doesn't work that way.
No one's ever, it's not happened. I don't know if it's happening in your neighborhood, because I'm going to move there if it does. I've got to go out and find that opportunity. I've got to go out and create that opportunity. I've created opportunities that I've fallen flat on my face, Gary, but I've learned from them. I've grown from them. I've polished them. That's where my foresight comes from, that I know I tried this back in the old days, but it didn't work. I just want to touch on that because that's important. This was a lesson I had from a chief master sergeant when I was in the Air Force. It was like one of my first leadership meetings. And I said to him, Chief, I think we should do this for a dramatic effect. It didn't happen like this, Gary, but for dramatic effect, I'm going to add it. He slams his hands on the desk and he says, you know, Sergeant, I've tried that 100 times and it doesn't work. And I felt like I was 2 inches tall. And he said to me something that really changed me. He says, but who's to say it doesn't work the 101st time? Give it a shot. Well, I'm here to tell you it didn't work the 101st time, but he didn't stifle my creativity either. He didn't stifle my, you know, my idea either. Just because you've made the mistake and you give the wisdom and you share your abilities and share the knowledge, and just because you failed at it doesn't mean the cure of cancer isn't out there. And we've got to remember that.
And the life of an entrepreneur is not being successful, not achieving your goals, and doing that over and over and over again until you're successful and you start achieving your goals. Then you still have to learn. Not everything it becomes perfect after that. If you spend 6 years as an entrepreneur and you're not making it, it doesn't mean that you haven't learned valuable lessons to set you up in the future.
You know, John Maxwell was my friend and mentor. And when you think you know about leadership and you sit in front of John Maxwell, you realize just how much about leadership you don't know. But in his book, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, he has the law of process.
Yeah.
And leadership develops daily. It doesn't develop in a day. And this is where you've got to continually grow your process to get to your next level. And this happens all the time. You know, Gary, I don't know everything there is to know about leadership. I can't raise my hand if somebody asks that question because I need to continually teach myself and learn the interpretation of the science of what it means to me. When we think about the law of process, if we're not going to grow ourselves on a regular basis, we're going to become stagnant. We're going to stop. We're getting in a rut. We're not moving along. This is where this, you know, the life of an entrepreneur fails. It's the speed bumps. It's the hurdles that derail us that we say, well, that was a mistake. You know what? The Wright brothers didn't have an airplane license. They didn't have a pilot's license. Yeah. You just got to keep going, man, until you change the world.
My thanks to Chris Ceballero. And Chris, thank you for your service. If you'd like to learn more about Chris, go to the show notes. And if you have a comment or question, go to unlabeledleadership.com. Click the message icon and you can leave a voicemail message for up to 1 minute. I'd like to thank those who donate to the show. Your contributions makes a difference because this is an all-volunteer service. Mostly, I like to thank you for listening. This is Gary DePaul. Until next time, lead on.